Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How are you?
I'm well. How about yourself?
Well, it's back to school time and iPhone event invitations went out. So I guess the summer is over.
Goodbye, summer. Suck it.
Yeah, we're out of here.
Yeah, well.
I get it. It's weird. It's just, nothing. If you write about Apple, nothing makes the passage of time clearer than the space between WWDC and the iPhone event and realizing that you're diving into the busiest time of Apple's year, which is this thing that starts with the iPhone event and then kind of goes until we're close to the holidays, really.
Yeah, this is true. There's a lot that will probably happen between now and then, and certainly, you know, the September event, which always happens, then we'll start discussing whether or not there will be a second event, depending on things that weren't shown in the September event.
Classic move, yeah.
And then people will, you know, get their new devices, and we'll spend all our time talking about our new devices. And this year, we get the added wrinkle of trying to figure out what's going on with their versions of iOS. And it's, but it's a pattern, right? Like, and we've lived this pattern for a super long time now, and it's gotten, in some ways, you know, there's variation within the pattern, but it's been pretty consistent for the past many years now.
Yeah, they change it a little bit here and there just to confuse us, but the fall iPhone event has been a standard for, like, I don't know, what, 7 years now? It's a long time now.
Yeah. I mean, there were, I'm trying to remember, even before that, at times there were, like, fall media events back in the day.
For the iPods back in the day, right? Yeah. How long ago that was.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. You know, this is a company that is always going to want to push its newest and best stuff for the holiday season. So getting stuff announced in September or October is about your window for, you know, really capitalizing on getting stuff delivered by the holidays and getting stuff on people's radar by the holidays. And it's different in every industry too. I'm always fascinated by, I don't really follow this closely, but the merchandising market for like toys and stuff. Like they have their own, you know, shows and stuff like that where they start showing off their, like, you know, Lego shows off its movie tie-ins for the new Star Wars movie or the Marvel movie or whatever. And, like, you know, same sort of thing where, I mean, in that case, it's extra complicated because they want to show stuff off to retailers and then have those retailers decide what they're stocking for the holiday season. Although even that may not be as much as it used to be, given the sort of collapse of the retail market.
What do they say? Like, some large percentage of everybody's revenue and in a lot of businesses, everybody's profit comes out of the holiday season, right? It's just, this is it's an economic pattern, and Apple is affected by it too. There is this, I was fascinated, the tariff story about how there were going to be a bunch of tariffs in September. And Charles Arthur, the tech journalist from the UK, did a post today about how he has a theory that the iOS 13.0 getting locked in, and surprisingly the beta is turning into 13.1, which is a thing that happened. His theory is that it's a tariff hedge that they wanted to get their phones shipped out of China for this launch before the new tariffs went into effect in mid-September, and that therefore they were going to load them up with an earlier version of iOS 13 and then just have them update when they get in customers' hands. Now that tariff, you know, and there are other theories too, you know, and the stuff that I've heard has been more about it, that this was a really rough beta period everything's kind of a mess. And so they're kind of pulling things out and just trying to get something that's shippable on the iPhone come September 20th or whatever, when they release it. But they did move the tariffs back to December, but it's that's actually one of those things of sort of like, don't destroy our holiday season with these tariffs, because that's where we make our money. And the US government, I think, pushed back the tariff until December as a part of this trade war, which, you know, this is the challenge of stuff like this, is that it will either impact the it'll impact somewhere, right? Like either those prices will get raised, or the businesses will eat some of the tariff, and the retailers might eat some of it, but they can't eat all of it, and they pass some of the prices on. And it's part of the complexity of any company that's doing has supply chain in China involving this the trade war thing. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting theory, and it's definitely something that all these companies that produce in China are worried about for the holiday season. But now that it's gotten pushed back to December, all of their product presumably will be in North America well before that, because, you know, the gearing up for the holiday season, I mean, Apple, I think, gears up for the holiday season. They're never not gearing up for the holiday season. But certainly, everybody's got to get the stuff in place so that they can then move it out and sell it.
Fascinating to just look over the long history of Apple and think, like, it's not that this is a super recent development. I mean, but basically, I can't imagine. I'm sure that the holiday season was still a big mover back in the, you know, 80s and 90s. But I would guess that, like, computers are less holiday oriented, maybe. I don't know. It seems like things like consumer products like the iPod and the iPhone seem to be much more closely tied to the holiday cycle, if only because they're the kind of things that you would potentially buy as gifts for other people. Whereas I'm sure there were some Macs bought as holiday gifts, but I also feel like a lot of them were probably, you know, sold more throughout the year, or back to school season might have been a bigger bump for those. Like, it's interesting to see, you know, as over the past two decades, as Apple has really shifted to a consumer electronics company, how that had an impact. And also, more, you know, looking forward, you know, Apple has pushed a lot more of its growth onto services. Services, again, probably not as seasonal in a holiday fashion.
Service is definitely not. That's one of the beauties of services, yeah, right? Is that they're not seasonal. They're ongoing. Yeah. I mean, there are seasons in the entertainment industry, but they're more like Oscar season and premiere.
It's fall.
But then again, lots of content premieres in the fall.
Yeah, for reasons that don't, I mean, kind of made sense. It makes sense when you think about it on almost like an academic calendar, right? Like, summer is over. Everybody's gone back to their routine of work and school.
Right.
So you can schedule your TV time now. But that now happens all the time, too. So, you know, like that seasonality is much less what it was 15, 20, 30 years ago, when the only way to get stuff was on your TV.
The entertainment release stuff, like TV especially, it's all year round now and not just in the fall. But you do see, and movies, obviously, like even the summer movie season starts in like March or April now.
Yeah, April easily. Like, you see all the, even, I think I went this year to see Endgame like the day of or after my birthday, which is in late April. It's like, yeah, the big ones come out earlier and earlier. They also come out on like Wednesdays now, even though they don't, like a Friday movie opens on like, they used to be Friday movies opened at like midnight. Now they open like Thursday night. Now they open Thursday morning. Now some of them, I think, start to show up on like Wednesday night. It's weird.
It's the extended weekend.
Where does that end? It's sooner or later, it just cycles back to the previous Friday, I guess.
Yeah. Apple may be a part of this, too. This is a thing that people don't talk about as much, but Apple, in addition to all the TV shows that it's readying for Apple TV Plus, has made deals with movie producers, and they have bought some movies. So there will also be movies on Apple TV Plus, and that will be interesting because you know, Netflix is currently going through this, and it's kind of fascinating because Netflix wants to screen movies in theaters, which is counterintuitive, right? Because why does Netflix care? The answer is Netflix doesn't entirely care, but it does care about awards.
Yeah.
And it cares about its relationship with directors and other people who have a fondness for traditional release systems. Like, they want their movie to be seen on a big screen. They don't want it to be a, you know, direct-to-video release. Like, Martin Scorsese is not a director of direct-to-video movies. That would be his argument. And so you end up in this situation where Netflix has a bunch of movies that they're releasing, and they all have these different release windows. 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. 1 week is for awards eligibility. Like, you've got to screen it in LA for a week, and then you're Oscar eligible. But they want to do broader releases. What's funny is that a lot of the movie chains don't want to give them space because they feel like Netflix threatens their business model, which it kind of does. I get it. And so they have to deal with, like, certain chains will make deals with them to do a limited run. And then in some cases, what happens is Netflix literally just rents theater space, which is a thing you can do, which is not how traditional movies work, where Netflix will pay the theater chain a flat fee for their movie playing in this theater, and then they'll sell tickets and Netflix gets the money from tickets, but it's not considered box office. It's just this weird like other thing. I think that's how Fathom Events work.
That sounds
too.
Like the Fathom event setup essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, where you're renting it out and then you're making your own business. It's like a white label movie theater kind of thing. So Apple may have to deal with that too, and it'll be interesting to see what they do, whether Apple is more kind of like, yes, we'll buy these movies, but we're going to give them a full theatrical run, which is mostly what Amazon has done, or whether they'll be a little more aggressive like Netflix and say, we really want this on our service, so we'll only put it out there for a couple of weeks. And I can see both sides. One of it is like, it's our content and we want it. The exclusivity of it on our service is really awesome. There is this other thing, which is, here's a movie that got good reviews and that you didn't see in the theater, and now it's only on Apple TV Plus. Haha. If you want to see it, you have to come here, which is a way of marketing your service by releasing it in theaters, which is another way to go. It's just, it's fascinating. This is all this whole list of things that Apple has to think about now that it's a media company, an entertainment company.
And there are still a lot of questions, you know. I wrote a piece of Macworld this week, some things to think about ahead of the Apple event. And one of them is a lot of those questions that still remain about Apple TV Plus. Pedestrian things like, when does it come out? How much will it cost? But things that kind of link into that as well, which is what else is on this service, if anything? Is it just the Apple originals that they've teased? How many shows are they going to launch? You know, they've showed off trailers now for three-ish. Is that all that launches when this service opens and they're going to expect people to pay $10 a month, right? Like,
the Bloomberg report says that they're going to have like 6 or 7, but even so,
that's not
like
a lot for $10 a month.
What Mike
right?
was Mike said on Upgrade this week, like, if you give a free trial and you only have 6 shows, you could literally watch the entire catalog in the free trial.
Right. So is there something else happening there? Is there other content from other studios and content producers? Or is this really them sort of like, no, we think our shows are so good that you'll want to pay $10 a month for them, which I have a hard time believing.
And how are they going to do the rollout? I really hope we get answers at the September event, because I want to also know, are they going to drop the whole season Netflix style?
Are they
going to drop them weekly Hulu style? Are they going to drop a half season kind of buckets where they're like 4 episodes, 6 episodes at a time, but they're going to make you come back for the back half because, you know, again, free trial. We want to string you out, because that's part of the reason you want the HBO model of subscriptions anyway. And the Netflix model is you just have new shows and movies dropping their entire season every single week.
But
Apple can't do that. And the old HBO model, and this is what CBS All Access does with like Star Trek and things like that, the goal there is to keep, ultimately, CBS All Access wants a new Star Trek show, on the air, essentially releasing new episodes every week of the year, because then you can never cancel it. And so how does Apple deal with that? Because they can't drop everything and then just walk away for a few months, because it's a monthly recurring subscription.
Right. Especially when you're launching a brand new service, right? Like, I feel like in looking at like Disney Plus, for example, Disney Plus is dropping stuff on a weekly basis as well. And I think, again, that makes sense, because for the same reason that if you signed up for Disney Plus and November 12th, 8 episodes of The Mandalorian drop, and you can easily watch 8 episodes in a weekend.
Yeah.
No problem.
Not to be controversial, but I'm going to be controversial here slightly. Which is, I think binge dropping of shows like Netflix does, I think it sucks. I think it's terrible. I don't like it. And I know that people like a new show that they really love and they watch 8 episodes in a weekend or something like that. But first off, I don't have that kind of time to just devote an entire weekend to watching a TV show all the time. I don't do that. And second, it kills the ability to discuss the narrative arc of the show, because everybody's watching it off of axis of each other. It's all asynchronous, and we don't get to have that moment where we're like, oh my god, the Charles Manson episode of season 2 of Mindhunter was so great or so weird, or how did you feel about them visiting Charles Manson, which they did and it was really interesting, but it's just like, but you know, who knows who saw that episode, on to the next episode. And I hate it. So I would love it if all of these services other than Netflix started to say, yeah, we're not going to do that. And I would love it if Apple's rollout strategy and Disney's rollout strategy and all these new services were very much like, we're going to give you one a week. Maybe we'll premiere with two, but then we're going to give you one a week because we want you keep coming back, and we want you to talk about what you've seen so that the buzz can build, which that's the thing that kills the buzz for Netflix shows, is the dropping all at once. And I think it's the weakest thing about what Netflix
someone
does.
Watches a whole bunch and is like, nah, this season wasn't that great. And all of a sudden, like, you're like, well, maybe I won't watch it, right? Like, that's also from a commercial standpoint. There's a lot of possibility for things to go wrong, yeah, when people drop, you know, watch everything in one shot, because then it's harder to read reviews too. It's harder to like you said, I think you're totally right. It kills the buzz. And I would put,
and you can wait till it all drops. You people do that, right? People are like, oh, I'm not going to get CBS All Access until the whole Discovery season plays out, and then I'll get a free trial and watch it all. It's like, okay, you can do that. But, you know, if you want to be part of the conversation episode by episode, you got to be there.
Right. And I think I would put money down on Apple releasing its shows week by week. It just seems like something they will do. I think
they are traditional in a lot of ways.
And also,
right?
Because I feel like there is this, it feels personality-wise like the company. Like, right? Like, they're not a company where it's like, we've crafted this show. We've put a lot of time and energy. Here you go. Watch it all, right? Like, that doesn't feel very Apple-like to me. Apple-like means, like, we're gonna slowly, like, you know, like, let these things come out and let their stories develop week after week, and you're going to come back and you're going to tune in. And especially, like you said, if you've got only six or seven shows and you're charging $10 a month for them, you know, you could watch all of that in a month if they were binge dropped easily. And if there's a free trial, like you point out, you could just watch them all without ever paying for it. So I would put money down on Apple rolling out its episodes week by week. I just think that sounds more like the service that they are trying to build. I agree with you in large part. I've definitely been shows over weekends and stuff like that. I never feel great about it, though, right? Like, it's like going to an all-you-can-eat buffet, and you're just like, oh, there's so much food, I really got to get my money's worth, and you eat too much, and you're like, oh, God, I wish I hadn't done that. But it was there. It was free.
I feel bad waiting 2 years after Mindhunter Season 1, which was too long. They let way too much time go by. I feel bad that I watched the whole season, which was 9 episodes, across, 11 days.
Sure.
One episode at a time. I think once we watched two in a row, but, you know, I feel that way. There was some other show we just finished where it was the same thing, which Lauren was like, are you sure you really want to watch two? We're going to run out of them that much faster. I'm like, yeah, but I like it. Well, let's watch a second episode. It's the slow binge, trademark me. Even that makes me feel kind of bad, right? Like, what's great about it is that my entire focus is on Mindhunter for 2 weeks, and then I don't see it again for a year or two, but I'm like totally into it day by day. But, you know, then it's gone, and that could have been part of, you know, so I guess this is what I'm saying, is that I feel bad about it even when I'm doing the slow binge sometimes. Sure. I'm like, would it be better if it was more like Discovery, where every week there's a cliffhanger and everybody gets to talk about it, and then we come back the next week and get excited about it being on
Game of Thrones, right? Like, if Game of Thrones dropped all in one shot, like, would that have gotten the same attention?
Can you imagine?
Would that have been better or worse? I don't know, especially that last season.
And everybody's rushing to finish it because they don't want to get spoiled the ending goes.
Absolutely.
And so you're trudging through the 6 hours or whatever of that last season, not because you want to keep going right away, but because you're desperate to not have people ruin it for you. Well, it's no good.
There is something to be said still about, like, one of the few things of sort of like appointment television, right? Like, and it's not that you could only watch Game of Thrones when it came on the air, but you wanted to because everybody else was watching it at the same time, right? Well, like, that used to be the thing, but it's so much more limited now.
Partially because I was doing it as a podcast, but also because I was excited about it. Watching Star Trek Discovery at 5 p.m. on Thursdays this season, and it would be like 5:01. It's like, why isn't it in the menus yet? Yeah. Why isn't it in the menus yet? And there's something to be said for that premiere thing. That's the thing I remember thinking before we even got to streaming, when it was just a theory, like, you know, one day everything's going to be on demand, which is what people said, and they were totally right. I had this thought of, like, okay, everything's on demand. There's still going to be the moment that show comes on the air. And this is another thing that frustrates me about Netflix.
12-1, yeah, right?
They do it at midnight.
Yeah, I don't know what you're...
Why would you not premiere it in prime time so that everybody could sit down that night and be like, oh yeah, the new whatever just came out. But Netflix is like, bah, algorithm, blah, blah, whatever, 12:01
a.m. It feels like it doesn't really respect the content at all either, right? Like, there's a thing, again, it kind of, to use the food analogy, it's like your midnight. Oh, I shouldn't stay up till midnight and eat a bunch of cookies out of the, but I'm going to do it, you know? And then you feel like I know people who stay up, you know, watch a show at midnight, watch two or three episodes, and then like, are just totally wrecked the next day because they stayed up late to watch this show. And it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like a quick hit, but at the same time, I don't feel good about it. And I don't,
right.
And like, I don't remember a lot of it either.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm really interested to see Apple's move on this. And I think it's especially interesting when you put it up against something like Disney Plus, which is coming out around the same time, which we know a lot more details about right now. And you know, obviously Disney, longtime staple of the entertainment world. So like, it's kind of a proved concept for them. Whereas Apple, I think there's a lot more, it's going to have to work harder to convince people in some ways, because this is uncharted territory for it. And I agree. I hope we learn a lot more about that on the 10th, because I'm intrigued. I know a lot of people are kind of down on it, but like, I think there's still not enough to make a judgment call at this point.
Yeah, I think the problem may be that, just a thought, that Apple TV Plus, as conceptualized a few years ago when they hired the guys at Sony to do it, is a product of an era where it wasn't quite clear what the environment was going to be. And now we know that every major entertainment company is bringing their entire, as much as possible, catalog plus originals to a streaming service they control. And it is a little bit, knowing what we know now, it's a little bit like Apple is bringing a knife to a gunfight,
right,
to use a movie reference. Paramount, owned by Viacom, which now also is CBS, which is one of the smaller entertainment giants right now. So, that I wonder, because everything is on a delay and this TV production moves slowly, I wonder if that report about how, well, now that Apple's spending as much as $6 billion on content instead of $1 billion, I wonder how much of that is just a time delay thing of them realizing that they need to change their strategy, and that just launching a niche service with some high quality content and nothing else is not gonna get them very far, given the way the world has shaken out. And how have they course corrected, or are they happy to be sort of the new HBO,
right,
where
right.
they've just got sort of prestige and nice stuff and you pay for the privilege? The problem is that their competitors are also funding good, well, high quality prestige stuff in volume.
But HBO also has a huge catalog, right? Like, they get movies
and they have
stuff going back to the 90s that they produce. So it's like, you know, they had to start somewhere, but they started in a very different environment from the one we're on today.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and that's what leads to all the speculations of Apple either striking a deal with or purchasing other companies in the entertainment space, is just to get raw content for their service that they don't, you know, right now they're just buying like a show here and a show there, and all their competitors have enormous catalogs of content.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think my argument is there's a couple facets of it. One, if all you're going to have is the originals, I don't think you can charge $10 a month. I think you will.
I
think you'll dig your own grave at that price. I think you need to at least hit the price point that Disney's aimed at, and you possibly need to undercut them. And that's not the Apple thing to do very often. Like, they don't often play the game of like, we're going to be the cheaper alternative, or you need to bundle it with your other services, which I still think is a possibility. If you are willing to like say, hey, add, you know, $5 onto your Apple Music subscription and we'll throw in Apple TV Plus, that's a lot more compelling for a lot of people who are already in the ecosystem. And you can already appeal to all those people. They've got your devices, right? Like, this is just about incremental add-on of revenue at that point. Or you need to find a way to have catalog content. And it's unclear to me that a lot of I just don't think there's a lot of other companies, because of the exact point you just made. Everybody wants their own content controlled by themselves. I don't think there's a lot of other companies that are going to look at this and be like, should we give our competitor access to our catalog of movies and TV shows? Sure, why not? Right? Like, that's...
Well, it depends on how much they're willing to pay.
It does. It does. But if you have the option of, you know, licensing it out or controlling it on your own service... that's a tough one. I have to say, I think a lot of them are probably going to choose in this day and age to try and keep stuff in-house as much as possible. It just seems like control of content is strategically a big deal in this current environment.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking at the TV app right now, and I do think part of the strategy, and this maybe figures out, like, everybody talks about how it's all about Apple services revenue, and so they need to make money because it's services revenue. But it's a little more potentially complicated than that, in that they also are doing like Apple TV channels. Right, they also want to make their kind of TV app really sticky. And that's not just because they want to sell people on Apple TV Plus. It's also because they want people using the TV app, that it makes the platform better. It drives out to different apps. It drives out to things you buy via the channels system, where they get a piece of that. And so one part of the play for Apple TV Plus is just to add to what's in the TV app. And, you know, that's why I think you could make the argument that they will end up bundling it with Apple Music or whatever for essentially nothing, or all, you know, nothing or close to it, just to get people kind of used to it while they're ramping up the content, and to populate the TV app and to get people in there. I could see them making that argument. It's just not a very Apple-like move to give things away for free or cheap because it's Apple, but... This strikes me, what we've been saying the last 10 minutes is, this is not a market where Apple can play its usual games now because of the environment they're in.
It's a uncharted territory for them, and it's a marketplace in an environment that is rapidly changing. That's tricky.
I'm totally on board just for all mankind.
Yeah.
Because that,
it looks cool.
The Ron Moore show about the like alt history space race kind of thing, that looks great, and it pushes all my buttons because I'm a space fan. So I'm excited about that.
I'm excited about that. And I'm intrigued by the morning show, and that's mainly because I really like behind the scenes. I liked the newsroom. I liked Sports Night.
I feel the morning show trailer felt to me like an interesting mix of West Wing and Sports Night.
That's called the newsroom, Jason. They did that show.
I hope not, because that was a bad show.
I really didn't like that show at all, but I understand why it did not work for a lot of people.
Okay, I don't want to say that was a bad show. The Sunset Strip. No, yeah. Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
I watched that one too, and that was not a good show.
The newsroom, it was not bad. It was not for me. I after like three or four episodes, I was like, I can't watch this show anymore. Yeah, this is ridiculous. It made me angry.
It got better as it went, but yeah, it was neither as good as The West Wing or Sports Night. So in that way, you're like, why bother? But I stuck with it.
So we see the peril of the morning show. It could be the mixture we want of The West Wing and Sports Night, or it could be The Newsroom, which would not be so much, except because it's set on a morning show and not a crusading news broadcast with a extremely holier-than-thou preachy anchor at its center. Sorry, Jeff Daniels, but that's why I hated the show, is that character was just so like all of Aaron Sorkin's ideals of what a dream of a truly principled journalist, and they're super preachy. And
you should at least someday look up the clip from the episode where he talks to the guy who's talking about climate change, which is one of the funniest bits from that entire show. I highly recommend that. It's just a really nice bit of comedy.
The nice thing about the morning show is the way it's done. The show within the show stakes are very low.
Right.
It's the Today Show. The personal stakes of the characters are high, and there's corporate, the network and the money and all of that, those stakes are high, and it's in the public eye, so the stakes are even higher. And we've got Steve Carell, who's been exiled, and we've got Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, although I did roll my eyes a little bit, although it's very well done. If you analyze it just from a story perspective, it's exactly the story you thought that they would tell, so I hope that there's a twist somewhere, because it's literally Steve Carell gets fired, Reese Witherspoon comes in, Jennifer Aniston hates her because she's the new shiny object, and she's going to replace her as the object of affection for everybody. And I thought, well, yeah, okay, that's the most obvious set of things for this show to be. I sure hope that it's more complicated than that. I'm not sure it is, but I hope it is.
And execution can go a long way. I mean, you can take a bad, you can take a mediocre premise and elevate it into something much better.
For sure, for sure. But it looks like they spent a lot of money on it, and it looks great, and it was pacey and snappy and all of that. I will say Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip had a great pilot, and then it was a disaster after that. But, you know, yeah, it's interesting. But For All Mankind is enough to get me in the door just because it's, you know, space and done by Ron Moore and looks pretty fun and kind of period NASA plus a twist, and it's but we'll see. I mean, really, it only takes one or two to make somebody go over. Like, I paid for CBS All Access basically for Star Trek Discovery for one
Star
show.
Star Trek is a special case, I feel like.
It is. For All Mankind, like, I'm not a lifelong For All Mankind fan, right? Yeah. That's not going to work for me. You're going to need a little bit more. But I did pay for HBO for Game of Thrones, basically, and maybe a little bit of, like, John Oliver or something like that. I did. The calculation is different for everyone, but that's what Apple needs to do, is price it that way. Knowing that, you know, meanwhile, over here is Disney Plus with the entire Disney archive and original Marvel shows and original Star Wars shows. And
that's a tough I mean, it's not a zero-sum game, but it is a tough comparison to draw. So also interesting given those companies traditionally close ties in the last couple decades, to see them going head to head now for the first time, really.
Yeah. Anything else we should talk about?
Well, I guess as we mentioned, we have this Apple event coming up, so there's a lot of stuff being speculated about for that, and you know, we touched on some of it, but it's good to know that there's a date where something's happening now. You know, it's always nice when that calcifies a little bit, and you're like, all right, we can stop speculating about when this is going to happen.
Yeah, it is literally the most obvious time for it to happen. Like, for weeks now, I've been saying, you know, September.
I also wanted to point out that it's exactly 5 years to the day on that day
that we all lost our jobs.
So that'll be a fun...
But that's only because they wanted to do the layoff on the day of the Apple event during the Apple event, and we told them that would not be a good idea because we would all be working then.
Boy,
so and I didn't really want to turn to you and Phil and say, gentlemen, I know that U2 is on stage touching fingers with Tim Cook, but
it's been a pleasure working with you.
You've been laid off. So unplug your laptops, stop the live blog.
Boy, that live blog would have gotten interesting if we'd been fired in the middle of the show. Yeah, that would have gotten...
So instead,
speaking of like your network moments from like Studio 60.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Now I got the live blog, and let me tell you all my list of grievances.
Yeah. Yep.
So instead, they waited a day, which was wise on their part. But also, yes, it does mean that it is 5 years to the day.
Yep. Well, we can celebrate with an Apple.
I guess. And on the, you know what that means is that on September 16th, it will be 5 years of sixcolors.com.
Yeah, that's exciting. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. Yeah. Are we doing anything? Should we have some cake?
Nah, I guess you could have cake. Just say that it's for Six Colors or something.
All right. Why not?
But yeah, five years. It's wild. Pretty wild stuff.
Crazy.
That was Upgrade also 5 years. It was the same day.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't going to launch the site that, not to reminisce, and some people have probably already heard this, but I was going to give myself time. But like we've been saying, this is the hot time for Apple stuff. So I couldn't let it go by. If I'm going out on my own... and so I had to launch on the embargo date of the iPhone. And so that was September 16th, which means I had to launch the site then, which means I had no time. I like literally had no time. We got laid off on the 10th and I went to XOXO actually. And then, took the train up to Seattle for a day and visited people and was writing my review and then came home and launched the site. And we also did Upgrade, recorded in advance to drop at the embargo time. And so all of basically my second life started on embargo time for the iPhone, which was September 16th of 2014.
The Rebound launched on the 17th. I was just looking it up.
Yeah, see?
So, yeah, that time, like you said, that time of year, kind of made a big difference, so.
And Clockwise moved to Relay.
Clockwise did move to Relay, although it's now well past its 5-year anniversary. I kind of forget because it's hard to track with the year worth of time we had beforehand.
Yes, I was going to say thanks to all those IDG executives who have long since been removed and are no longer in their positions there for approving the, go ahead, take your stupid little podcast, whatever. And we got to walk away with Clockwise, which was great.
Good. And it's still going strong.
And so we brought those to Relay, and it's still kicking, which makes me happy.
Just passed 300 episodes a couple months ago, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
Celebration.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing that it is stuck around and got that life. And that was one of those things that I definitely told Mike and Steven is that I wanted to also bring. I basically was like, also Clockwise can come. Dan doesn't know yet, but Clockwise will come with him. It was like I was planning your exit, which is not great, but it was like, I got you. I know you lost your job, but I got you this podcast.
I landed on my feet, I guess. Yeah.
It was that's an episode to listen to, by the way. The episode, which was our first non-IDG episode, which did get posted at Relay, but I think at the time we posted it in the SoundCloud of Clockwise. but it is literally an episode with four people who got laid off by IDG.
I have to go back and listen to it. I don't even remember.
It's you, me, Phil, and Dan Frakes.
Wow. That's probably...
And it's like the government in exile, the podcast in exile. And then the next week, we were officially on Relay.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I have to look up when exactly that was.
At times. I want to put the whole archive. It's linked to in the Clockwise, on the Clockwise page as like a separate podcast feed. But it's not in the actual podcast feed.
Yeah, that's like episode 54. Yeah, 54 is titled "Government in Exile."
Government in Exile. Yeah, that's it.
Wow. Yep, that's trippy. Yeah, I was trying to find the blog post I had written about it and realized it's on a site that's now dead that I have to. It's like I have it somewhere in a database. You know, when I dumped that old site, but. Yeah, I don't know. It's not online anywhere anymore. Those were the days.
That was September 17th. So it was 5 years. Basically, we had the Relay 5 event and all that. And it's just like, yes, we had our milestone 5 years ago. But, you know, time marches on and we continue doing what we have been doing, which is great. And Apple continues to have these events. So it gives us... a little extra to think about on Apple Event Day, I suppose.
Sure. It's true. It's an extra dynamic.
Yeah. In the intervening 5 years, Dan, you've published two novels and have another on the way. So
that's true.
It's pretty good.
That's true. Nothing. I have no complaints. It was not to say that it wasn't rough at times, but everything has worked out.
So next week, Kalandar demands our presence here or something. So
Generally, I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll do that then.
Yeah. No reason not to.
There won't be an Apple event by next week. It'll be the week after. So we can talk about our extreme anticipation for that Apple event.
I'm guessing next week might be one of those weeks where stuff starts to leak out a little bit in drips and drabs. We'll have to see.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The silly people who run their website who post things that they're not supposed to post. I hope they fix that. I mean, it's great, I guess, for the leaks and stuff. But really, like, you're a big company. Get it together. Stop posting things on open web page URLs before the product gets announced. Just don't do it.
Yeah. There. You should take the
Solved.
Whole store down. Put up a post-it note.
Yeah, that's good. You got to take it down. You got to take the store down.
Yeah.
It makes people excited. Take the whole website down. Apple.com is just like, please wait. See it in 2 weeks. Yeah. It's great. All right, well, we'll talk more then. But until then, thanks to everybody out there for listening to the Secret Podcast. You'll get a newsletter today as we record this. You should get something in your inbox with the articles we wrote. Thanks for supporting us in this 5-year journey and continuing. If we were the USS Enterprise, we'd be going back home now, Dan.
That'd be nice.
The USS Six Colors.
They never get to go
home. We can never go home.
But I guess we can shop there.
I had a dream that I was in the IDG office with IDG people, and it was very weird. And I was like, "Wait, am I back here again?" was very confusing.
Just when you thought you got out, Jason, they pull you back in.
Mm-hmm. Reference acknowledged. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.